Hello and welcome to Stories from a Small Blue Marble. My name is Brian Hancock and I'll be your storyteller. Before we get started, I wanted to thank you for listening. These stories are my life in small bite-sized chunks. I have had an incredibly charmed life and I'm happy that you're here with me to enjoy some of it. So let's get started. This story is called Under African Skies. This is part one. I believe that there are just two things that a parent needs to do for their children, beyond the obvious, of course. They need to give birth to the child, or at least be there at the business end when the baby is born. Here's a funny story. An old mate of mine was there at the birth of his child. He was at the business end. He told me later that it was like watching his favorite pub burning down. I understand, having been there a few times myself. Anyway, I digress. Maybe this should fit in the obvious column as well. The second, and I believe the most important thing, is that you give your children a great childhood. Childhood shapes us and generates memories that sustain us through much of the rest of our lives. And familiar sounds and smells can instantly transport you back to your childhood. The older you get, there are a few of these triggered memories. It's the childhood memories that really count, and it's why I think that a childhood is so important. I bring this up now because I had an awesome childhood. I grew up barefoot in Africa, where we were allowed to roam free and get into all sorts of trouble. I had broken a leg by the time I was 3, a broken arm by the time I was 5, and had cracked my head open twice before my 10th birthday. And that was just the big stuff. Africa has changed now, sadly, and that time and place will never come back. I feel so blessed to have been a part of it. There were a couple of bumps along the way, but it was all worth it. I was a small kid and always felt the need to overcompensate for my stature by being daring and stupid. In short, I was a naughty kid. Trouble always seemed to follow me. I was the 4th of 5 children. My sister was the oldest and the apple of my dad's eye. Pete was the next, followed by Tuffer. His name is Christopher, but instead of going by Chris, he opted for the other half of his name and went by Tuffer. I was next, and then my younger brother Rob. We were all fairly evenly spaced around 2 years apart. Our home was a large rambling place that seemed big when I was small, but when I went back there as an adult, it didn't seem so big after all. We lived on a dead-end street, and at the end of the street was a part agricultural college, part reform school. All boys, of course. All the schools when I grew up were segregated along gender lines and were there for white kids only. Black kids had their own places out in the country, but they weren't required to go to school, and no money was spent on educating them. That's just how it was done back in those dark days of apartheid. Why on earth would a black kid need an education? Well, now we all know what a mess that country is in now, and most of the population has no education, anyway. Behind our house, there was a field of corn, and after that, a row of hen houses. We'd sneak through the corn and come out the other side with a plan to steal the eggs. They'd set up a guard dog on a long line, and he could roam back and forth and protect the chickens. He was a nasty dog, and he hated us. When he saw any of us, he would start to snarl and bark and chase after us. Sometimes, when we got to the end of the cornfield, he was asleep. We would tiptoe to the chicken coops, lift up the lid of the nest in box, and stick our hands in looking for eggs. The hens would peck at us, but we usually got away with a shirt full of fresh eggs, and we would run home and our mum would make us scrambled eggs. It was just great fun. Until one day my brother Pete decided that he wanted to befriend the dog. Pete had a magical way with animals, and he would always friend them. Problem was, he used to take me along with him as the fall guy. So with much reluctance, I followed him through the corn. We came out right where the dog was fast asleep. Instead of just stealing the eggs and making a run for it, Pete wanted to say hi to the dog and sat on the ground just a few feet from the animal. The dog opened one eye and he couldn't believe what he was seeing. Some of his most hated foes were there right in front of him, sitting on the ground. He started to snarl. I wanted to make a run for it. I had already peed my pants, just a little. Pete sat still, making some kind of clicking noises, and slowly scooched forward. The dog could not believe what was happening. He snarled again. Pete was calm and held out his hand. The dog was getting really mad, and I was terrified. I wanted to run, but Pete kept making soft clicking sounds and scooched even closer. Suddenly, the dog stopped growling. He licked Pete's hand and then rolled over on his back. All he wanted was his belly scratched, and it was a valuable lesson. Most fierce animals, people included, just want their tummies rubbed. He never gave us trouble again, and we kept swiping eggs every day, and we never got chased. We used to go down to the river and play what's called in South Africa, claylight. Basically, what we would do was find a lengthy piece of bamboo. There were a lot of us. We'd cake a knob of mud on one end. If you swung the bamboo stick, you could throw the knob of mud at someone. It would fly through the air, and if it connected, it would really sting. We used to set up two teams and pelt each other with mud for hours. By the time we got home, there was mud caked everywhere. My mom would hose us down outside and then chuck us in the bath two at a time. There was all sorts of fun until my brother Rob took a shit in the bath. And that was when it wasn't that much fun anymore. We had servants. Constance was our housemaid. Mabel was the junior housemaid. We had someone come in once a week and iron, and we had a full-time garden boy. We called him Boy, even though he was a grown man. It's just how it was in apartheid South Africa. Connie and Mabel would clean the house every day, make the beds, and cook our meals. Each night, I would put my shoes outside my bedroom door, and in the morning, they would be back there, shining clean. Connie would bring us tea in bed each morning. I remember one morning so clearly. Her boyfriend was a lightweight boxer who went by the name Tap Tap Makatini. I googled him recently, and it turns out he was quite a champion in the South African underground boxing scene. We had no idea. He would call us master and bow and scrape to us when he came to visit. In hindsight, it was just so pathetic. This beautiful man, a champion boxer, had to bow and scrape to us. We were just teenage kids, but we were white, and he had to get on his knees and bow in order to get by us to see his girlfriend. And honestly, if we didn't give him the go-ahead, he just turned around and went back to his own home. That's how it was back in South Africa. It was ridiculous. As a result, we were all huge boxing fans, and the big, big event was the Rumble in the Jungle between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman. It was to take place in the middle of the night in a jungle in Kinshasa in Zaire, which was in Central Africa and is now known as the Congo. Many years later, I was flying home from London to see my family. I took the cheapest flight I could get. My girlfriend Erin was with me. For context, see and listen to my story coming to America. Anyway, we landed in Kinshasa, I guess to refuel. They were loading everything on board. Literally, people had chickens in their carry-on. When we took off, the door flew open and we had to return to the airport, which, by the way, was just a dirt runway. They gave us a new plane and we made it safely to Johannesburg. Anyway, I digress again. It felt like they were boxing in our own backyard. We were all big Muhammad Ali fans. I remember that morning when Connie bought me tea. All she whispered was, "Ali won." It was huge news for us. We hadn't been able to stay awake to listen to the fight on the radio because the fight started after midnight. We never had TV growing up. No one in the country did. TV came after I was grown and gone. Ali won. Now that was news, and we were all happy kids for weeks and weeks. I would sit at the end of the yard every day and wait for our newspaper man. His name was Shake, and he rode a very old bike delivering newspapers around town. He promised me that he would bring me a budgie, which is a small bird. He also said that he would bring me a cage. I would wait every day for Shake, hoping that he would have a budgie for me, but he never did. I wrote a poem about Shake. It's in my book, A Skinny Book of Sketchy Poetry. It's a very sweet memory. I still want a budgie. One day we were throwing clay lights at each other when Pete noticed something. In the cracks on the riverbank, there were legavines. If you don't know what a legavine is, it's a cross between a massive lizard and a small crocodile. They're about 3 or 4 feet long and have a very large mouth with big teeth. Pete, of course, wanted one as a pet, and he could see a scaly body in the cracks. He made me run home to get an old Hessian sack. I think that it was what they used to deliver coal in for us back when we were young. I got the sack, and when I go back to the river, Pete made me grab at the Leguvine. It was a really tricky business. I asked why he didn't grab at the damn thing himself, and he told me that his arms were too big to fit in the narrow cracks, and that my arms were skinny, and they could fit just fine. Well, okay. Whatever Pete said, I did. The problem was I could see the body, but had no idea if it was near the head or the tail. By the way, we had caught a lot of Leguvines just for fun, but now he wanted one for a pet. I poked at the lizard and it didn't move. Then, because all the other kids were urging me on, I stuck my hand in and grabbed the thing. I don't remember where I got it, but I would usually have to pull like heck to get it out of the crack, and of course, the Leguvine had his claws dug in deep and was going nowhere. Sometimes one of the other kids would help me, and we would yank a very pissed off lizard out of a muddy crack, and it would come out squirming and trying to bite us. We managed to stuff it in the sack and take it home. It didn't take Pete more than a few days to befriend it, and it quickly became his loyal companion. Pete also collected a variety of snakes. We loved the snakes, but one of them was poisonous. It was called a red-lipped herald. It wasn't going to kill you, but if it bit you a few times, you would get really sick. We would use rubber bands to shoot lizards down off the ceilings and then chuck them in the tank where the snakes were. Within seconds, the snakes had it for lunch. On weekends, my mum would take us to the pet store, and we would buy small white mice for just 10 cents each. We would feed the mice to the snakes. Unlike the lizards, who seemed completely unfazed while they were being eaten, the poor mice were terrified and their whiskers would quiver as they were being eaten, and of course, we loved it. The snakes often escaped and we would find them nestled between our clothes. Cody and Mabel hated snakes. It was part of their Zulu tradition to hate snakes, and they were terrified when they discovered a snake under a pile of t-shirts. Pete also had a pet crow. That was a real bastard. It lived in his room. I hated the crow, and the crow hated me, and it had a long beak to make its point. One day I won a small chicken at the town fair and brought it home. It ran free in the garden and grew into a large chicken who thought that she owned the place. But during the summer holidays, we'd either go to the mountains to go hiking, the game parks to see the wild animals, or the beach. We had a beach cottage on the coast just north of Durban in a place called Salt Rock. If the timing was right, we would be there during the sardine run. The newspaper and radio would report where they were, and when they got to our cottage, we would go to the beach with buckets. There were literally thousands of sardines in the water, and all we had to do was stick a bucket in, and we'd get a whole bucket full of fish. My dad would make an open fire on the beach and gut the sardines and chuck them on the fire. He would have already collected mussels from the rocks, and they would go on first, and we would eat like kings. The only meal I remember being better than the sardines and mussels was the time my uncle came for a visit. He brought along a chicken, and my mum cooked it long and slow in a pot with herbs. It was really a feast, and I only found out later that it was our pet chicken that I'd once won at the town fair. There were so many stories about growing up, but one day my mum put me in the car, and we took her for town. She bought me a school uniform and a satchel and some books and said, "You're a big boy now. You start school tomorrow." And that was the end of my childhood, or at least as my early part of my childhood. These stories and more are in my memoir, Two Bricks and a Tiki High. The poem Shake is in my book of poetry. Hope that you'll buy either or both books. And as always, thank you for listening. For all of my books, please go to www.brianhancockbooks.org. It's .org, not .com. There you'll find all of my books, my Substack blogs, stories, and very soon my podcasts. There'll be interviews with sailing legends, and I think you'll enjoy all of the content. So please check in and say hello, and thanks as always for listening.